Peter Carroll, thanks for joining us on the show.
Hello there.
So, explain to the nation, I mean, you're a practicing chaos magician. Explain to the nation what that means.
Well, chaos magic developed towards the end of the 60s, early 70s in this country, and it basically sprang from the eclectic point of view. But basically, around that time, there was a magical revival, and there was a reignition of interest in people like Aleister Crowley and Austin Spare, and there was a whole load of kind of cross-cultural data coming in from the East and all that sort of thing, and a general revival in our occult traditions.
Now, isn't Aleister Crowley, he's the Satan guy, right?
He was a bit naughty. I mean, for a Victorian gentleman, he had a remarkable amount of illicit fun, not all of which was illicit in those days.
Yeah.
But, he has a bit of an off-white reputation, that's for sure.
So there was a revival in the sort of the 60s, 70s period of looking into the occult and treating these ideas of magic. I mean, Led Zeppelin are known for looking into this kind of thing. Other rock acts suddenly became fascinated with the idea that maybe some of that stuff might be true.
Yeah, well, Jimmy Page apparently developed a big interest and bought Crowley's old pad up in Burleskin, collected a whole heap of Austin Spare paintings and that sort of thing. Difficult to tell really whether his interest was a bit of a pose or whether it was serious. I mean, we don't sort of see him on the scene, as it were.
Mm-hmm. And then chaos magic. So what is that then? It's that period's happening and chaos magic begins. I mean, what is it? Explain it.
Well, it occurred to a whole bunch of us that you know, there was a tremendous amount of anthropological and historical data being made available. And we looked at it all and thought, well, yeah, I mean, magic appears to be something that's part of humanity's common heritage and probably ultimately derives from shamanism back in Neolithic times. And wherever you see the historical development of magic, it's always got into some, you know, highly complex form of local symbolism, often tainted by local and historical religions. But it did seem that there was an underlying basis of technique there. There was an underlying body of practical activities which were used to actually make it work. And those struck us as more interesting than, you know, whatever local or historical symbolism it was couched in.
Right, so for example, I guess you're talking about how different religions who you know, can be operating on different sides of the planet, they'll both think that things like the best example I can think of is human sacrifice, right? A lot of people think that, you know, no matter where you were from in the world, most religions thought that was worth doing.
Well, indeed, they probably did back in very ancient times. I mean, nowadays, such activities have been, you know, sublimated into merely symbolic sacrifices. I mean, Christianity is, in a sense, its central ritual is a symbolic sacrifice of blood and bread. Personally, I'm not big on sacrifice.
No, I didn't expect you would be, but give us some other examples of sort of common themes in magic from across the world.
Well, I was quite fascinated on my travels out east to discover the ancient Tibetan Bon practices. Bon was a form of Asiatic shamanism which predated Buddhism. Seemed to show some remarkable parallels with medieval European magic. You know, the casting of circles, various things at the quarters, invocation, evocation, and so on. And interestingly, their tradition had already broken into the kind of sex magical idea, which was revived by Aleister Crowley.
Mm-hmm.